Hello, and welcome to Monumental, where we sit down with entrepreneurs, leaders, visionaries, and big thinkers making monumental change. Here's your host, Evan Holliday.
Welcome to Monumental. I'm your host, Evan Holliday, and today we have on the show with us the man himself, Nikolai Ray. Nikolai, how you doing, man?
I'm surviving.
Hey, day by day, right?
Day by day. I've got my survivalist beard going on. I got no hair. I have no gel in my hair. You know, it feels kind of like the zombie apocalypse. There's just no zombies. You can't shoot anyone.
Yeah, people are just staying inside. Yeah, exactly. And I definitely want to get into that more because I know a lot of people are going through that. But a quick background on Nikolai. Nikolai is the founder and CEO of MREX. He's regarded as one of North America's leading experts in apartment investing with over $1 billion in analysis and transactions. He's a leading expert in multifamily financial engineering and is often called to stand in as a teacher, advisor, and speaker. He's also a real estate technology pioneer with his current work on multifamily real estate property tokenization with blockchain. So I'm really excited to get into MREX, what that is, what's the purpose behind it, what's your mission behind it, and really like the democratization, like we talked about a second ago, of multifamily real estate investing. But let's kind of go back to the beginning for you and your story to give our listeners a little background.
Yeah, so actually I'm a Canadian. I was born in the French part of Canada, Quebec City. And despite that, grew up in Los Angeles in California. So I actually grew up as an American. So, you know, I spent my elementary school years, you know, standing up every morning and putting my hand on my heart and singing the Star Spangled Banner, looking at the flag. Grew up rooting for the U.S. Olympic teams. So I have a funny background where I pretty much I'm Canadian, but I'm also American by adoption and by upbringing. Lived in LA for the first 11 years of my life, lived through the two major earthquakes in the early 90s, and then we came back to Canada after the last earthquake in 94, just because we lost everything. We ended up homeless. Wow. In 94, living in a park, living in a tent pretty much. And my parents were like, you know what, we've had enough of this, and let's go back to Canada where there's a bit more of a social net. And, you know, things were getting pretty violent for me at school, you know, growing up in LA, growing up in, you know, some pretty rough neighborhoods and, you know, a lot of gang violence, a lot of things like that. And, so we came back to Quebec, had a pretty, tranquil life in Quebec as a teenager, became a hockey player, actually ended up playing professional hockey for a couple of years. And studied in biomechanics, preventive medicine. Had a short stint at the Harvard Extension School and at the medical college, and then actually became a chief of human performance for the Canadian Olympic teams. Ended up going to 3 Winter Olympics.
Wow!
Yeah, built a couple businesses in the 20s. Built 3 businesses. Had some really, really stunning successes, and had one huge failure. Where I ended up going bankrupt and ended up homeless, I guess for the second time in my life, pretty much. In my late 20s, ended up founding a real estate investment banking firm. Built that up rather quickly within about 3.5 years, sold that. And then, you know, actually in my early 30s, founded the company that I'm building right now, MREX, which is an acronym for Multifamily Real Estate Exchange. So it's been a crazy, I guess you could say, it's been a crazy 35 going on 36 years, especially a crazy last 13 to 14 years.
That's amazing. So now today with MREX, how do you think, because, you know, a lot of your story, I didn't even know that, you know, that leading up to where you are today.
And that's the short version. Like I probably could have taken another, you know, hour or so just to actually... Yeah. Go into it. So
we'll need 5 more podcast episodes for that.
Right.
So what is that experience for you? You know, those lots of kind of trials and tribulations of, you know, going through hardships, going through ups, going through downs, successes and failures. what do you think has led you to where you are today with MREX and in along that journey?
Well, I think, you know, both my own personal and also my entrepreneurial path and my professional paths have kind of coincided to give me a very unique perspective, not only on real estate, but on the investment side of things, you know, strategy-wise, market cycles, investment philosophy, but also on just how the market works. What's the technology in the market? How are people actually transacting? How are they managing their portfolios? How are they making decisions? So this unique perspective that I've acquired, not only because of how I grew up, how I've lived, but also my toolbox, if you want, you know, coming from a very scientific background, having the math aspects of things, and also having the real estate experience, has really allowed me to have a bird's eye view and not get stuck in the conditioned view of how real estate should be, how it is, and how it can be. And I think that's probably my biggest strength. And, you know, there are a couple of interesting things, because I have various ways of looking at real estate. You know, on one side of things, I grew up very poor. I grew up, as I said, in Los Angeles. And LA in the late 80s was a very crime-ridden, poverty-stricken city. It's changed quite a lot, kind of like New York City changed. You know, mm-hmm. if you went back to New York City in the 70s and 80s,
right,
it's not like New York City today. Well, Los Angeles has changed a lot like that too. You know, and I always talk about the story of how I was about 5 years old and we were walking in downtown LA on a Sunday going to breakfast somewhere. I don't remember exactly where, obviously being that young. But what I really remember about that day or that story is that I felt deeply affected by the amount of homeless people that I saw in the streets of LA and the amount of just of dirt and pollution, of trash, right, and looting. And I said to my parents, I said, one day, and I looked at one of the skyscrapers in downtown LA, and I said, one day I'm going to have a skyscraper with my name on it in every major city in the world. And my company is going to clean up the streets and build housing for the homeless and, you know, help these people and help cities be better. Now, obviously, you know, when you're five, you're probably a lot more idealistic than you are when you're 35. So as life goes on, you become more realistic. You understand the constraints of capitalism, you know, that you actually have to, you know, you can't just be Mother Teresa, that you actually need money also to survive and to do all these fun things and these philanthropic things. So as obviously as life went by, I've always kind of kept that same, if you want, naive idealism deep in my heart and my soul. And I also believe, you know, empirically that social mobility is something that I consider very important because I grew up poor. Now, I actually come from a very wealthy family. I come from a renowned Indian family from the northeast of India, which is you know, probably considered one of the biggest families in the northeast of India. We're talking about a family that were pioneers in you know, in entrepreneurship, in industry, in science, Nobel Prizes, you know, huge companies. And I won't get into the story of why I actually grew up poor despite coming from that family. Let's just say that, you know, there's a generation that got cut off for various reasons. So coming from that, I look at social mobility and how I kind of managed to pull myself out of poverty. And I view social mobility in our society as key. It's very, very important. What makes the difference between, say, the United States or Canada and let's say Brazil or Argentina or Africa is that we have access to relative social mobility. You can grow up in the ghetto in California, in Los Angeles, you can grow up in a poor rural area of Alabama or Tennessee, and you can still aspire to have more and to have a better life and to do more than what your parents had or did. Right. You're not constrained to that. I mean, yes, there are obviously obstacles and difficulties and whatnot. The odds are against you. But compared to someone growing up in a favela in Brazil, The odds aren't against you. They're on your side, right?
Yeah.
So what allows for social mobility is obviously education, number one, access to education. We have obviously better access to education up here in Canada than you do in the U.S. But I mean, I think access to education in the U.S. is still actually pretty good, especially now with internet and like, you know, e-learning and online campuses and, you know, stuff like Khan Academy or Coursera and stuff like that. I mean, if you want to learn, you can learn. You don't have to go to Harvard, right? You don't have to pay $40,000 a semester for an Ivy League education. It helps for your network, but you don't really need to do that. Now, the second thing that helps with social mobility is actually real estate, right? They've been doing a lot of pilot projects in Sao Paulo in Brazil and Rio de Janeiro, where you know what they've been doing is they've been the government has pretty much see the problem in favelas and shanty towns, and that can be in Brazil or India, is that people have been living for generations, families, generations, and they're not allowed to own where they live. Right, it's all government owned. So what they've been doing is they've been allowing now, and this has happened also on Native American reserves and other places in the world where you have this huge segregation because people are not able to access real estate as property owners and therefore build up equity and leverage that property and help them climb the economic ladder, if you may. So that's why I think real estate is extremely important. And the way I look at it is specifically to what I do is multifamily real estate is one of the asset classes where you have the least amount of risk and the highest returns, right? So you have one of the biggest wealth creators, but it's very inaccessible because if you want to just buy like a 5-unit property in Nashville where you are or in Quebec City where I am or Los Angeles where I grew up, you know, you're going to need at least $50,000 to $250,000 down payment to buy one property, right? And that takes a while to build up. To save up $50,000 to $250,000, it's not easy if you're not a doctor or a physician or a lawyer or someone with a high paying job. That's a tough thing to do. And even if you do manage to do it, you're putting all your money into one property. Now, if you're doing that, you know, diversification is not important when you master the investment class that you're investing in. Now, when you don't, diversification becomes very important. Now, if you only manage to put aside $50,000 to $250,000, you have a full-time job doing something else, a W-2 or whatever, or you're an entrepreneur, you probably don't have time to become an expert in multifamily real estate. So, but unfortunately, because of the way the economics of multifamily real estate are set up, if you want to be an active investor, well, you don't have the buying power to diversify, right? Now, you could go the LP route and invest, you know, in syndications and stuff like that, but then you're not really that active. And that's a whole different business model than just being simply, you know, an investor who wants to buy a couple properties. So that's why I got the idea of saying, well, you know, I think we need to make a more efficient way for people to invest in real estate.
Yeah.
And people who actually do have a lot of money, let's say you already own a couple hundred units, you have a lot of equity and capital, you have access to you know, to be able to invest in real estate. There is no one centralized marketplace where you can say, well, I'm going to go look at inventory and decide what I invest in, right? Because multifamily real estate is a lot like the hotel world before Expedia. Before Expedia or Travelocity or these different aggregators, you know, if I went to Nashville to come visit you and you had no room for me to stay at your place or I wanted to stay at a hotel, I had to go on the website of every single different hotel chain and then kind of like compare and decide what I wanted to rent, which is very inefficient, time consuming. And there was, you know, I pretty much had to build my own comps just to decide which was the better deal in a hotel room. Well, that's the way the multifamily real estate market is set up right now is there's no one website. It's on a bunch of different various websites with different information, structured differently, and most of the actual inventory that transacts is not even done via these public websites.
Yeah. So it sounds like the big why behind all this is one, try to democratize and let more people have access to multifamily investing because that is part of the social mobility piece that you saw growing up and you from an early age wanted to have that impact on others and say, hey, I want to help people that don't normally have this opportunity to invest in real estate and use this as a tool to actually help them move up the economic ladder and use multifamily investing as a low risk way to do that.
Exactly. And you know, that's the end. The end goal is to allow anyone in the world, you know, from their cell phone within a couple clicks to be able to invest in a multifamily property, right? I think anyone should be able, I think someone sitting in their apartment in Tokyo or someone sitting in their little house in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil should be able to go on their cell phone, because everyone has a cell phone. Even in Africa and Southeast Asia, in the poorest places, everyone has a cell phone. Go on their cell phone. Now, if you manage to put aside $1,000 and you live in a favela, and now you own your house in that favela, and you know, for various reasons, you believe that an apartment building is probably the safest investment relative to the yield that you can generate, well, why shouldn't you be able to invest $1,000 in an apartment building in Nashville? You know, if Evan Holiday can do that, if Donald Trump's son can do that, if I can do that, why shouldn't that person in Brazil or that person in Tokyo not have that same power, right? And why shouldn't, say, my buddy who's a cardiologist who makes a lot of money but doesn't have time to learn about real estate investing, why shouldn't he be also be allowed to say, well, I'd like to also build a nest egg maybe rather than spend all my money? And, you know, within a couple clicks, simply, easily, with confidence, invest in the real estate market. So that's the end game. Now, obviously, that's a big piece to swallow. That's, you know, that'd be completely revolutionizing the real estate market. I mean, we're talking about probably as big, if not a bigger evolution of the market as what the stock market went through with the arrival of the NASDAQ and digitization of the stock market.
Right, right.
It's a really big, it's a big play. I'm not talking about something that's going to take 5 years. You know, we're talking probably, this is a lifelong project. I'll be on this probably till, you know, my late 60s, 70s. I'll probably die doing this. but to get there, the way you start is by making the actual investment market in its current form more efficient. So, you know, guys like me and you who are already in the market, how can I make the market more efficient? And the first step is by creating a centralized marketplace and giving you access to actual data. So what we're doing right now is kind of creating like an Expedia of the multifamily marketplace, hooked into kind of like a Bloomberg terminal for multifamily investors.
Yeah, I love that. And I really couldn't agree more. I think with multifamily and really real estate in general, it's the biggest alternative asset that's not like really publicly traded on the stock market besides a REIT, but that's not really the equivalent.
No,
that's more of a generalized.
The problem with a REIT, and I get a lot of people who say, "Well, you know, they're REITs. What are you talking about?" Well, number one, a REIT is a mutual fund. You know, that's like saying, "Oh, you can trade in the stock market." Well, buying a mutual fund and actually buying shares of Tesla or Apple, two very different things. Now, investing in a REIT is like buying into a mutual fund, right, or an ETF. That's not like buying a stock. And why is multifamily real estate specifically so interesting to people is because there's nothing like driving in front of an apartment building and saying, I own that, or I own a share of that property.
Yeah.
That property is not going anywhere unless it burns down, right? Or it gets destroyed by a natural disaster, which in most likely cases is insured. If you go through a recession or maybe even worse, a depression, chances are, compared to the rest of the economy, there'll probably still be people living in your apartment building and probably still be paying something, right? So that's very different than investing in a REIT. And that's not something that's quite possible right now. Now, other people might say, well, there's crowdfunding, right? There's a couple platforms that have done all right so far, thanks to the Jobs Act in 2012. But crowdfunding, the problem is, yes, now you're giving access to the crowd. So you're actually giving access to fractional real estate, but you're pretty much missing a big factor, which is liquidity, right? Because as you invest in these crowdfunding projects, you're stuck in them for the life of the project, where that could be 5 to 7 years traditionally in real estate. Maybe if you're lucky, if you're doing a debt structure, it might be, you know, 1 to 3 years. Now, if you're doing a debt structure, well, then you're not really investing in real estate. You're investing in finance, a whole other discussion. So, you know, what that all comes down to, it's a long-winded way of saying is, you know, people are saying that it's possible, but it's not really possible at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. You know, we've had on the CEO of CrowdStreet, and yeah, he brought up that exact same point. He said exactly what you said. He's like, the problem is right now is liquidity, and you know, you're basically stuck into these investments for 5+ years sometimes.
Exactly.
And you're at the mercy of the operator and the property, and don't have any way to sell it if you need liquidity or cash or whatever. So I think you're spot on. And honestly, I think, you know, even beyond this podcast, I think you and I should keep talking, because I think this is very much aligned with what we're doing and the investments we're doing. We're trying to basically provide this platform for workforce and affordable housing, and using that as a tool to help people go up the social mobility and move themselves and their families up the economic ladder. And also a step beyond that, we had talked about kind of what you're talking about with the favelas, is we're like, how can we maybe even give a piece of ownership of some of our deals to the residents if they want to say, you know, the rent's $700 a month, say, hey, pay $750 a month. And, you know, after a year or two of doing that, we'll pay you back a dividend of the cash flow from the property. We haven't really dove into that, but it's just an idea that we thought about. We're like, how can we like give them ownership of the actual building they're living in, or some fractional piece of that?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, that's a great idea. It's kind of like creating like a stock option plan for employees, right, in a startup, where, you know, that'd definitely be something interesting to look into. I think that's you know, you understand exactly what I'm talking about. I think, you know, and I think as entrepreneurs, as capitalists, you know, and obviously I'm Canadian, so we're a bit more to the left. We're a bit more social capitalists than the Americans are. Mind you, I'm pretty much half and half, so I'm like kind of in the middle there.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think it's to our advantage to do that, because by doing that, you're creating wealth, right? And you're helping more people create wealth. And in a capitalistic society, the more you can help people create wealth, not only at the top, but also in the middle and the bottom, well, you're going to create growth. And, you know, in a mature society like we are in the occidental part of the world right now, you know, relative, you know, absolute growth is down because, you know, it's just a, you know, basic math. Now, if we want to increase, that wealth creation, I think that, you know, that's definitely one way to do it, and you know, it just makes your investments even better. You know, imagine how tenants will treat the units they're living in and the buildings they're living in if they now see that not only as a, you know, a place they're renting, but also as a place that is helping them save money and maybe even invest and maybe even climb the social ladder.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be a game changer.
Yeah, that was honestly part of our thought process. We're like, well, if they get ownership, imagine your turn costs would go down. It's just kind of one of those things. You're not only helping them, you're helping the property, you're helping your investors, you're helping everyone rise up, because everybody takes more ownership of it and they see that they're invested and they're going to get some sort of return on this and going to ultimately help everybody win. I think it's really powerful what you're doing and that idea of like, hey, let's help people rise up this ladder and we'll all be better off for it.
Right.
So walk us through that, like you starting MREX and kind of where you got your vision and how you started implementing that.
Well, I mean, it was very real estate focused. You know, obviously I'm a deep practitioner of multifamily real estate investing. It's my profession. You know, my specialty is in financial engineering. I pretty much did investment banking in the multifamily space, you know, for pretty much the second half of my 20s and all into my 30s so far. So, you know, working on the buy side and sell side of multifamily properties, working on the underwriting, modeling, structuring of capital stacks, due diligence, risk management of huge portfolios. You know, I got to the point where I was like, you know, the eureka moment for me really was, I was in investment banking and clients were very liquid, who had, you know, very nice portfolios, and they had all this money that they were ready to, you know, to put in as down payments to buy properties. And it was such a pain just to get access to inventory. You're like, where's the inventory, right? You know, you go on LoopNet, you go on Crexy and 10X, which was auction.com before, you go on Zillow, you go on MLSs, and, you know, you go on these, you know, 7 to 15 websites, and you're trying to get an idea of all the inventory that you could invest in. Now, just that is a job in itself, right?
Yeah.
Now, once you get an idea of that inventory, well, unfortunately, they all show different data on the listings. So then you have to kind of harmonize that data, bring it into a normalized version, pull that out, and then you can start to look at, compare apples to apples. And then you realize, geez, that's actually only probably about 30 to 50% of inventory. Because most of the market is transacted through pocket listings.
Right. That's what I was going to say.
Private offerings.
Yeah.
Passive sellers. You know, people who have not decided to list their property, but hey, you might call them on the right day or send them a letter, and they might decide to sell that morning, and you might be that buyer, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like in the mergers and acquisitions market of corporate America. So, you know, I got thinking to myself, I'm like, this is just ridiculous. This is like trying to do grocery shopping without any grocery stores, right? It's like trying to find a hotel room without Expedia and Travelocity. So I said to myself, you know, why is there no centralized marketplace? Imagine trying to invest in tech stocks, but without a NASDAQ. Like, you're actually going to go and call on every single tech company to see if you can invest in them? That's pretty much what we're doing in multifamily real estate.
Yeah.
And then the second part of that was, you know, I'm hearing people talk about cap rates and you know, all this data. And I'm looking at the data. I'm like, you know, this data is based on very small, very small sets of data. So it's kind of like investing blindfolded, right? So I said to myself, there must be some way of accumulating better data. I mean, I know that CoStar has data, lots of data. And, you know, there are other sites like Reonomy and various sites. But, you know, once you start looking deep into their data sets, you're like, this is not really that great. You know, it's very expensive. So you're paying a lot for not that great data. So that's where I kind of got the idea for Emirates.
So what are you all doing differently that separates you all from what was done previously?
Well, we're working on it, number one. It's a work in progress. It's a very big thing to chew. But, you know, what we're doing is we're taking an approach that's very different. You know, obviously, the tech companies that exist out there, the data companies that exist out there are very they're legacy companies. Most of them were built in the 90s, you know, on the old SaaS model. You know, they there's a big barrier to entry. Like we were talking about CoStar. I mean, if you want decent data from CoStar, if you're a multifamily real estate investor, you're talking about thousands of dollars a year to get access to that data. Yep. Now, you haven't crunched that data. You have not managed to pull out insight from that data, like actual business intelligence. You know, so, and you might not even have the capability to do that. So, you know, we're taking a very investor-centric approach where we're building our technology to work with investors. So instead of saying, you know, I'm building a platform in here, I'm charging you $500 a month to get access to my data, what I'm doing is I'm building tools for you as an investor. I'm giving you that tool, and you become kind of we become collaborators in the way that we're building the data set. So what we've done right now is we've built probably the, you know, by far the most powerful mobile analysis and modeling tool ever created on a cell phone. So it is the most, I mean, think about Excel spreadsheets. Say goodbye to Excel spreadsheets. Take your cell phone, and from anywhere in the world, you can start crunching data on a listing that you're looking at. You can start building models in a very easy way, very simplified way, still pull out very advanced insights and knowledge, even though we're making it simpler to do that. So you don't have to be take a course, an advanced course on Excel modeling. Now, by doing that, obviously, what you're doing is you're showing us what you're crunching. We're getting insight on all the data, what properties you're looking at, how are you modeling the various listings that are for sale. And obviously, if there are listings that aren't for sale publicly, well, you know, let's say a broker sent you a pocket listing. Well, we're getting access to the data on that pocket listing through your modeling, right? And on the other token, well, you're getting access to our tool. So we're kind of trading. We're pretty much trading information. And through that, well, we're now being able through time to build data sets that just did not exist before.
So where can our Monumental listeners utilize that tool? Is that available now?
So right now it's in alpha mode. So a limited set of users are using it. We're launching the beta within the next couple of weeks up here in Quebec. And we'll be launching the beta in several parts of the U.S. and English Canada by the end of, I'd say, 2020, beginning of 2021. So we'll be launching for the whole of English Canada, Ontario, British Columbia. And in the U.S., we'll be launching in the state of New York, Massachusetts, Georgia, Florida, Texas, and California.
Wow.
So we'll have data on every single property in those areas. So, for example, right now we have data on every single apartment building of 5 units and over in the province of Quebec, which is equivalent to a state. So ultimately what we have the entire historical and property data on around 60,000 properties right now. And then what we do is then as users crunch their data on various listings, well, that helps us populate even more our data set on each property.
Interesting.
So the database just grows and grows and grows.
And so, yeah, it really just sounds like a combination of almost like adding in a little bit of Wikipedia in there where you have like contributors.
You can see it as like a mix of like a CoStar and an Expedia and Wikipedia all into one, but for multifamily real estate. Yeah.
That's really interesting. So as far as I noticed on your website, you had like the multiple, like part of the pyramid of, you know, building out the education piece, helping those understand what multifamily investing is, what it's about. Could you walk us through kind of your all's pyramid of how you all are adding value to your audience?
Well, I think if you start building tech and data for the investment community, that investment community has to have the toolbox to be able to use the tools, right? So we're building tools. You know, like if you look at the stock market, the NASDAQ, Bloomberg Terminal, stuff like that, those are tools. Now, if you want to invest in the stock market, you have to have the right toolbox, which is knowledge.
Right.
So that's why we started with actually building what we call the College of the Emirates, the Emirates College. And we decided to start educating real estate investors, educating in a different way than kind of what's going on. Because right now, the education market in real estate is pretty much you have on one side what we'll call the gurus. And I don't say that in a bad way whatsoever. But, you know, it's much more seminar-based. It's based much more on, you know, financial freedom and very applied into, like, learning how to syndicate deals and stuff like that. That's great. I think that needs to stay there. There's some great people educating investors there in that part of the market. You know, I look at guys like Jake and Gino, Rod Khalif, Michael Blanc. I'm forgetting probably a ton of guys, Ben Leibovich. Obviously, Bigger Pockets. There's a lot of people doing really interesting things and good work on that side of things. And then on the other end of the spectrum is more like, you know, the theoretical institutional level of education that you might get at a degree in finance or a master's degree in real estate. You know, that's not really that accessible to everyday multifamily real estate investors. So what we've decided is kind of, we've put ourselves in the middle of that spectrum of saying we want to offer that high level education that you could get, say, at a Harvard or an MIT.
Yeah.
But more specific, just the multifamily real estate or or real estate at large or finance or economics, but really multifamily real estate of that level, but accessible to everyone. Not just not just accessible to someone who has a degree in finance from an Ivy League. We want it to be accessible to anyone who wants to buy an apartment building or who wants to invest in a syndication or who wants to invest in multifamily real estate. So we've kind of positioned ourselves in the middle of that spectrum. And that's why I think we are complementary to what, you know, Rod Khalif and Jake and Gino and you know, Brad Sumrock and all these guys and gals, yeah, what they're doing. And we're also complementary to, you know, to a degree in finance or a degree in real estate at a university or a college. So we're really in the middle there. And what we're doing there, our mission is obviously, once again, to democratize real estate, to help people become better real estate investors ultimately, right?
Yeah.
As they are able to do that, they'll be much more served by the tools we're building them. They'll be better investors. And, you know, I think everyone will succeed if we do that.
I love that. And I think you're spot on with the, not only the democratization, but the platform you're building is very complementary to other people's teaching, other people's education.
Absolutely.
What a lot of other companies are already doing in a different aspect, you're like an add-on service to that. And it's like creating your own blue ocean on top of the fact that democratization of real estate and multifamily investing already is a blue ocean.
If you come and study at the MREX College, that shouldn't prevent you from going to Jake and Gino's syndication workshops, or Brad Sumrock's, or Rod Khalif's, or whoever out there, you know, offers already that type of stuff. Yeah. And you going to one of their workshops or courses or programs, mentorship stuff, coaching stuff, shouldn't prevent you from coming to study at the MREX College, because we're going to teach you stuff that they're not teaching you on a different level. But there's also a bunch of stuff that we don't do that they do. Like, we don't offer coaching. We don't offer mentorship. We're not there for that. We're there to push your knowledge base on the theoretical, but also on the applicable side of things. But you also need that coaching or that mentorship or those networks that you're getting from those various institutions that are already in place, right?
So jumping ahead to 2020, what are you most excited for? I know we'll also dive into COVID-19, but with everything that's going on right now, what are you most excited for in 2020?
Well, I think the financial engineering and real estate investment banker in me is just very excited about the times that we're in. We're in very turbulent times at the moment. And, you know, a lot of people have been forecasting this for a while. I'm actually one of them. Not that I want to toot my horn or anything like that, not whatsoever. But, you know, people who are really into data and economics have been saying for a while that we were heading towards this. We couldn't tell that, you know, it was going to be some virus from people eating bats in China that was going to, you know, trigger all this.
You didn't see that coming?
No, I didn't see that coming. But, hey, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But I'm very... very obviously, the macro guy in me, the economics guy in me is very excited to see what's going on. You know, and I don't say that in a very, you know, I'm very compassionate and very in tune to the you know, sad human conditions of people dying and people losing their jobs and losing their businesses. And I'm a business owner. I have a very big payroll. You know, and this is also affecting me, so I'm very sensitive to that. But like on an economics and a real estate investment strategy and philosophy side of things, this is an amazing moment in time to gain experience and to become much more knowledgeable, because what's going on right now is very unique. And this is a great way of testing our models and learning and becoming better investors. So I'd say bullish on that, not necessarily bullish on the market. I think the market might actually take a dump, but I might be a bit more bearish on the market itself in the short term. And you know, it just comes to show me that, you know, what we're doing, what our mission is on democratizing real estate and educating investors and empowering them through education and tools is even more apropos right now. You know,
yeah.
It just shows you sophisticated investor. What I've been saying for the last, you know, I've been telling people for the last 5 years, you can't get away, or you won't be able to get away anymore by just being a mom and pop investor buying a couple of apartment buildings with basic knowledge. You have to become sophisticated.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're spot on with that. We're all going to learn a lot from this. And I think if we're all having the mindset, you know, with COVID-19 and the world pretty much going into shutdown for the short term, I think if you have that mindset of like, this too shall pass, and having the mindset of, hey, how can I use this as an opportunity for growth, for opportunity, for expansion, for pivoting, right, even whatever it is, just put in that time, intention, effort, energy into seeing, like you said, like, how can we learn from this? How can we grow from this? How can we see, okay, this is going to be a huge market shift for the short term and even the long term. Like, we've thought about, we're like, for the workforce and affordable side, like, there's already a crisis in that bandwidth of multifamily and providing those units. Now we're just exacerbating the problem, which increases our demand, but also means we need help from cities, right, counties, governments, federal governments to help pay for this affordable housing that's needed. So that's exactly where we're thinking. We're like, well, this is going to be a massive shift in how we're all looking at real estate, investing, the economy, but we need to make the most of it for ourselves, for our families, and for our businesses.
Absolutely.
So how, as far as like speaking to other business owners, other listeners right now, what is it like as a business owner facing this unknown and kind of not knowing when things are going to get back to normal or what is normal anymore?
I'd say probably the word that comes into mind is trying. Very trying times, very challenging times. I think this is a moment in time where, you know, it's a great moment to test yourself. You know, I don't know if you remember the movie 300, you know, the Spartans, right?
Yeah.
Who would send their children, their young boys, into the woods, you know, yeah, on their own to survive at puberty. And then if they came out, they became men. I kind of see this moment as that right now, you know, and it's very challenging. I have a very, very healthy business. It's been growing exponentially every year. And even for me, it's a very challenging time. So I can't imagine people who didn't have businesses who are as well set up as mine and who, you know, have as much risk management in mind and stuff like that. Ultimately, you know, as you said, this too will pass. Now, I think you don't want to fall into magical thinking of like, you know, well, let's not get worried, this will pass. No, obviously, you know, you have to manage what's going on.
Yeah.
You have to make very tough decisions. I have a friend yesterday who had to lay off, you know, all 200 of his 200 employees. You know, he has a business that's doing $50, $60 million a year in revenue. Within 2 weeks went down to doing zero.
Yeah.
And he does not know when it's going to start up again, right? So those are tough decisions. And you know, I think you kind of have to take this moment to try and, you know, get too down, not get too pessimistic, be a realist, but also try and maintain some realistic optimism. And as you said, see this as a moment where, you know, we have a very, in the Western world, we're very afraid of contraction, death, anything opposite of growth, right? We're very afraid of that. It's very taboo. You know, death is taboo in the Occidental part of the world, where, you know, there are Asian parts of the world where, you know, death is celebrated. And when you learn about market cycles, when you learn about energy cycles, the circadian rhythm, you know, obviously I'm a science guy, so I actually grew up in medicine. You realize that, you know, life is all about rhythms and cycles, and you can't have expansion and growth without contraction and death. That's unfortunately part of it. And actually, it's not unfortunate. We've just decided to look at it as something unfortunate, yeah, right? So I think if you are able to get into that kind of mindset, without becoming kind of airy fairy and, you know, kind of becoming, you know, kind of guru-ish and, oh, everything will be all love. I think if you can still stay, you know, with your two feet on the ground, maintain that mindset, you'll end up doing well. You might not in the short run, but you know, on the macro of it, you'll end up doing well. And to do it the way that you personally decide to do. And you know, success for me can be on a different level than success from you. And you know, I think that's ultimately what it comes down to is you know, having the freedom and the choice to be able to try what you want to try, whether that's of a very grand level or not. That's okay.
Yeah.
Different levels of success, really.
What about daily habits or morning rituals that you have?
Daily habits, morning rituals, I'd say coffee, definitely. you know, obviously coffee. I think reading is just such an important daily habit. Whenever I get away from it, I always become a lot more, a lot dumber. I lose perspective easily. I think anyone does. I think reading is just amazing. Just how it gets your mind going. Like sometimes I'll be reading stuff and I'm like, it'll get me thinking about other things that are not even in yeah. line with what I'm reading. But it just, you know, it gets the juices flowing. It gets you in a more positive mindset, obviously, if you're reading positive stuff. So I think that's definitely an important habit to maintain. I would usually say getting up early, but I'm a night owl. So I kind of, you know, for many years, I got up really early, like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. It was very productive. there were moments I was very productive, but I ended up realizing I wasn't that happy though. And now I'm more in a natural flow of my own circadian rhythm where I stay up late and get up later. I'm a lot happier. I'm not as productive, I'd say. I'm definitely not as productive. I don't get as much done. I'm not as, I procrastinate a lot more, but my creative side of things is much stronger.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
You know, and I think we see that a lot with artists, you know, and I think there's a lot of, as an entrepreneur, as an innovator, especially as an innovative entrepreneur, I'm much more innovative than I am managerial. You need that creative side of things. You need to kind of let that creative side of your brain flow. So,
yeah.
So I think that comes back to what we were talking about cycles. You know, there are times in my life where yeah. my habits are getting up early and there are times where my habits are not, right? I think you have to really listen to yourself and be honest with yourself. And ultimately, the biggest habit this time where I'm at in my life right now is taking time to try and just disconnect
yeah.
from the business. You know, whether that be a half hour of playing with your kids. I have 3 young children. Just going out for a 15 to 20 minute walk, meditating, pouring yourself a glass of scotch at night, jumping in the jacuzzi for a 20 minute cycle, whatever.
Yeah, I love
that. You need to do that. And it's hard to do because, you know, it becomes like a drug, not disconnecting from social media. I saw that you disconnected in Christmas time
yeah.
from social media. I think that's, you know, I think that's important.
It, what are your kids thinking about COVID-19 and everything?
They're too young to care about it. They're 7, 5, and 4. So they're just like, this is like a big vacation.
Yeah.
Where we can't really do that much except for stay at home, play, and go for walks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's amazing how many more walks we've gone on since this started.
Well, it's that or cabin fever. So
yeah, exactly. So in closing, I first just want to thank you very much for this conversation. I had a blast. I really got to learn a lot. I really got to really get behind your mission, where you're going with MREX. I love it. I love what you're doing. And I know our monumental listeners are going to get a lot out of today's episode. Where can our listeners reach out to you or follow you?
Well, first of all, I appreciate having me on the show, and you know, it's good to see you again. We finally met in Florida, yeah. in Orlando, actually at a Jake and Gio event, which was really yeah. cool. So the easiest way to find me, Facebook, I'm quite active. I'm very active in French. I'm becoming more active in English. I'm trying to, it's hard to balance the two, English and French, because let's say I have a huge following in French. So I'll write a lot for the French population and be like, well, I should write that for the English population in the US and Canada. But then it's like, ugh, I have to rewrite all of that. Like, it's a bit of a pain, but I'm getting better doing it. So Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, obviously I'm pretty active, I'd say. Those are probably the best ways to follow me. And you can also start following the MREX, MREX College. Also, we're opening up our English website and English social media pages. We're coming up with online courses in the near future on especially underwriting, financial engineering, risk management, multifamily for just everyday real estate investors. So yeah, those would be the best places to find us.
I love it. Well, guys, if you got value out of today's episode, make sure you take Nikolai up on that. Make sure you share this episode on social media. Let us know you're listening. Let Nikolai know, let me know, tag us both. And do not forget to leave us a review on iTunes. That is really what helps fuel the fire and helps share these stories, amazing stories like Nikolai's. And guys, with that, have a monumental day.